Good afternoon, brothers and sisters.
Good.
How are you all today? Good. So, today we start a new series. Once a month, we are going to cover the Diamond Sutra. This will be similar to the Bodhisattva vows, which we covered over, I think, 1+2 years. Except that this will not be 1+2 years. This may take a while. Yeah. Expected timeline. So for this series, this is my teacher's transcript. So this is how thick, and the wordings is not too big, not too small. This is not the smallest I've seen. Yeah, so it may take a while. But the duration doesn't matter. Like, when it comes to learning Dharma, we tend to have this question mark. How long is it going to take? How many sessions will it be? When will we finish learning it? But when it comes to having lunch, we never ask, huh? We still have to have lunch today. We never ask, how many more lunches do I have to take? Yeah, we never ask that. Yeah. We never ask, how many more times do I have to sleep at night? When can I stop sleeping? Why is there such a difference? Polan, are you taking photos for the SGC? You are, huh? Take horizontal photos. Don't take portrait. Yeah. Yeah. Goes better on the. So, why is there such a disparity? There's such a disparity because learning the Dharma. Don't always give us the kind of gratification we are used to. It's not that the Dharma doesn't give us benefit. It does. It's just that, number one, the benefit it gives us is not something we are used to. Because it's not something we are used to, so we sometimes don't see the full value of it. Yeah. And as a result, even if we get it, we don't know that it is something useful. It's just like the small kids. You give them $100, I think they'll take it. Kids nowadays are quite smart. Yeah. So there are things in life that are available, that are useful, that are beneficial. There are things in life that are not so. Yeah. But because of our difference in viewpoint, yeah. 哎, 怎么样子啊? 要见妈妈? 你见了一个星期了, 就这两个钟头, 你不要见可不可以? 然后记得哦, 你说你要见妈妈, 以后长大, 不要跟妈妈说我没有时间哦。 我们把这段话录下来了，以后不要因为有了老婆，不要妈妈了。你看他想想一想，还是不要妈妈。哦，又来了，你看快乐的小孩，你看他多开心，yeah. Yeah, so at his age, mother is important. Yeah, mother is important. So certain things are important to us at a certain age, not at other age. Yeah, and so as a result, when 小心不要让他摔倒，后面很多那个椅子。 Yeah. So when we eat, if each time we eat, it takes 10 years before you are full, I think mankind would have died out. Yeah. Meaning that after eating, you are actually nourished, but you only feel full after 10 years. That means you have to go hungry, you have to feel hunger for 10 years, but your body is actually okay already. Yeah, I think we will all have died out a long time ago. If it takes even 1 week, even 1 day, before the hunger is abated, then we would have given up eating, and mankind as a species would have just died out. Yeah. That's perhaps why not so easy to sustain our learning in the Dharma. Yeah. And that's also perhaps why we sometimes find ourselves asking, how long is it going to take? Yeah. I've shared before, when I went to US, I didn't think about how long it's going to take. Yeah. I'm not saying my approach is better or right. It's just that there's this difference. Yeah. I wasn't thinking about how long. I was just thinking about whether I'm able to do it. Yeah. And when told that I need to learn for 20 years before coming back, I'm like, wow, only 20 years. Yeah. So, before we start, I think we should still go through our ritual. On the left, anybody who is new, I want to 争取时间. So very quickly, left side, nobody, right side, anybody. I think there is a young lady, young girl, young lady behind who looks new. Jason, you look yourself, you don't have to ask me. You look around yourself. Yeah, every week you also come. Yes. Tell us your name.
Hi everyone, I'm Janet.
Hello, Janet.
Yeah. Yes.
Tell us how you got to know about this group.
My mother-in-law introduced me to this.
Ah, hello mother-in-law. I see. Good, good. And who else is here with you today?
I'm husband.
Ah, hello husband. Your mother brought you here. Very good. Welcome, welcome. Ah, but your mother also brought someone here. Someone else here. The gentleman next to the mother. Have you introduced?
Actually, I came here 2 times.
Oh, but you never introduced yourself.
Yes, I introduced myself.
Oh, introduced before, and then introduced again.
Jin Sun.
Huh? Jin Sun,
yeah.
Jin Sun, okay, okay. Welcome, welcome. So, any other children who have not come here yet? Zipaigui, I bring all of them here. Yeah. So welcome to SGC. So we have short puja, short meditation, and not so short Dharma discussion. Today we are starting on the series, as I've shared, on the Diamond Sutra. So So you can find the original text for the Diamond Sutra in this website called cbeta.org. What is today's date? Yes, today is the 2nd of September. This sutra is known as the Diamond Sutra. In Chinese, it's Jing Gang Por Polo Mi Jing. So, it is part of the series of sutra on wisdom. Yeah, it's found in the Chinese Tripitaka under the section on wisdom, Por Pu. So, as I've shared, I'll be using this text. My teacher, Sang Miao Xia Jing Lao He Sang. So he gave this teaching, he explained the Diamond Sutra many years back. And then the publication team, they helped to transcribe it. Actually, some of these were transcribed by volunteers, his students. So this is my teacher. I'm actually very grateful for the fact that we have the transcripts, because in the early years, my teacher didn't even allow recording. Many of the older masters don't let their students do recording. Yeah, the reason is because they take it very seriously what they teach. In the Buddhist tradition, there's this teaching about how if you teach correctly, there is much merit, there is much wholesome roots planted. But if you teach wrongly, then there are dire consequences as well. In the Buddha's time, one of the teachers who has wrong views, after dying, went to hell. And Venerable Sariputra and Venerable Mahamoggallana, through their spiritual powers, saw that this teacher was in hell. Yeah. Prior to meeting Venerable Asaji, Venerable Sariputra and Venerable Mahamoggallana were learning under this teacher. In Chinese, it's called Mu Zhang Wai Dao. And so, after encountering Venerable Asaji, and then hearing the famous Ci you gu bi you, ci wu gu bi wu, wo fo da sa men chang zuo ru shi shuo, after hearing those verses, Venerable Sariputra attained Sotapanna. Thereafter, he went to see Venerable Mahamoggallana, shared the verses, he in turn as well attained Sotapanna. They together went to see the Buddha. But at some point, probably before going to see the Buddha, they actually wanted to ask their teacher to also go and meet the Buddha, because they know that this is the way. But their teacher refused. Their teacher heard the teaching, was very impressed, and in a way know that, yeah, that is correct. But the teacher said that he is already of advanced years with many students, and so if he were to acknowledge that his teaching is wrong, he feel, basically, simply put, you know, and he will lose all his disciples. As a result, he decided not to go. Sometime later, then Venerable Sariputra and Venerable Mahamoggallana attained enlightenment, and Venerable Mahamoggallana saw that the previous teacher, after passing away, went to hell. Yeah, because the teaching is wrong view. What is so wrong about wrong views? Because wrong views, if you have wrong view yourself, it leads to lower realms or hell. If you teach others, it's worse, because you are causing others to get stuck in samsara. Yeah. Ah, hey, 小朋友, 来, 看着师父, 玩一下子就好, 不能跑来跑去, 打扰, 师父要讲经咯，讲经你打扰有那个藏法因果的，哦，为了你好要讲你一下哦，讲不听要打咯。 知道吗? Seeing this, it is said, there's this conversation that was said, that Venerable Mahamoggallana went to, basically went down to hell, talked to the teacher, and the teacher actually told him to advise his disciples, his ex-disciples, to stop learning that teaching that he has taught. Because as long as they continue to propagate that, his karma continue. Yeah. So, Venerable Sariputra also know, but Venerable Sariputra see that, you know, they will not be able to convince the ex-students, yeah, those students of his. So, but Venerable Mahamoggallana went ahead, and of course the students were not happy. Yeah. So in the sutta, it's recorded that Venerable Mahamoggallana at some point was beaten to death by them. There's such a thing. And according to the teachings, it says that it's basically a karmic ripening of the karmic consequences between Vaibhara Mahamoggallana and them. Yeah. Because if you consider Vaibhara Mahamoggallana, he has his chief disciple, chief in psychic power. So nobody can harm him physically, actually. He's like, you know, the in those superhero movie. Yeah. But in Buddhism, the Buddha taught psychic power cannot overcome karmic power. Karma supersedes psychic power. When your karma is ripening, you cannot use your psychic power. You are just not able to wield your psychic power. Yeah, it will just overwhelm you. So this among many other references, so many teachers in the past, they are very hesitant to even teach for one, because for fear of teachings, because sometimes as we teach, slip of tongue, you know, or maybe sometimes we really misinterpret or something, there are consequences, you know. So my teacher, it is said that in the early days, he didn't allow people to do recording. Yeah. So, but you see, but I didn't ask for recording, in a way. Yeah, I didn't ask for recording. So, but at some point, they secretly recorded. And they got reprimanded. But after a while, my teacher also relented. The reason is because if there's any mistake, let's say in a talk, after that, he can still correct during the talk. But after that, if you pass on what is learned, that's your karma already. That's not his problem. Not a direct consequence. Yeah. So when they started to do what we call bilu, transcribing, my teacher again stopped them for a period of time. And they had to, my senior actually told me that they secretly did it, and then they did it in the car garage. You know, and then during winter months, no heating, hide there, something like that. Yeah. At some point, my teacher relented, but even at a later stage when they did copious transcribing, and these are all monks and nuns, and they're very serious about this transcribing. They spend hours just for one lesson doing transcribing. They don't paraphrase, and yet my teacher still insisted. After they transcribed, they wanted to publish. My teacher, for many years, he just, no. Yeah. It's not that my teacher is stingy with the teachings, but for fear that out of the, all the teachings, if there's one mistake, who is going to be responsible? Yeah. So I'm very thankful to them, and my teacher, of course, for allowing it to ultimately happen. Yeah. Because without which, after my teacher's passing, then that's it. But because of the recordings, we are able to continue to listen. Similarly, because of the various teachers, masters, the whole Sangha, who help to retain the teachings through recitations, that today we have all the different sutras as close as it gets to what was being taught. And also through the translations. In this case, the Diamond Sutra was translated by Jiumolo Si Da Si, Venerable Kumarajiva. So this Venerable, this is, I think, blue color. I cannot tell very clearly. Kumara Jiva. Jimulus Dasi. Yeah. There are many accounts of his life. Was he a prince? I think his background is also not an ordinary person. Yeah. One of the accounts I heard, when he would try to bring teachings to China, was that today is just impossible to imagine. Today we think it's very easy to get, because the fact is it is very easy to get. But there was a time where the Buddha's teaching, even the commentaries, to have a copy, to have a set, to have those teachings, those are considered national secret. Yeah, a national treasure. So to export that, you need special permit. Yeah, and basically you cannot get the permit. The emperor, the king will not allow that to pass. Yeah. So it is said that Venerable Kumarajiva at some point even did this. I don't know how true or the details, but this is what I heard, that he cut a slit in his arm and hide the scriptures in his arm, beneath the skin, yeah, just to bring it across. Yeah, you just think about that. Today, not just today, for the past 20, 30 years, yeah, we have many Dharma books, especially hard copies. There are a lot in temples just sitting there. Nobody wants to read. There are a lot in the storeroom in temples, all turning yellow, yeah, eaten by cockroaches or moth, because nobody wants to read. Or because the reason we give ourselves is don't know how to read. Chinese cannot understand. We have come so far in terms of material, resources, technology. All that can be solved. But one thing cannot be solved. Our wish to learn. About 20 years ago, when I started work, just before I started work, I worked on a project with one monastery, Kong Ming San basically. They were doing this Awakened CD-ROM. Yeah. And they contacted me because I had this Buddha Vachana software. And through that, while we were doing that, one of our intent was that we were all in our 20s, and we were thinking, the Dharma is so wonderful. We should get it out to the masses. What better way than to use the modern technology? Yeah. So back then, CD-ROM was a new thing. So we came up with DharmaPad. Before there was iPad, I'm serious. We had this software using AutoWare, and it appears like a handheld device on the screen, and buttons, and you can select and learn all about the Buddha's teaching. Yeah, we went back then in the Wan Fu Ta basement. In that few rooms, was stacks of all the books. They were plowing through, and last time there's so few soft copy. Yeah, we had to have one team type it out, then some try to scan. When we say some do this, some that. There's only three of us doing it. Yeah, I was doing the easy part. I was just doing the AutoWare and then a bit of programming here and there. We even put in a game, a maze game. And at each juncture, ask you a question, you have to answer the correct question to get out of the maze. We did everything we can. Throw in as much as thing as we can fit in that 650 megabyte. 650 megabyte, can you imagine? So small. One CD-ROM. The interesting thing is that when we finish a project, we did learn a lot, yeah, because as we go through the text, it was a learning experience for us also. As much as we are going through it ourselves, and then I can't remember whether we consulted any venerable. But you're just going through it, it gets in, you know. But a bonus that came up for me was, it helped me realize that we can overcome the language barrier, we can overcome the technology barrier, we can do all we can, but ultimately, people need to have the will, the interest, the desire to learn Dharma. It was in English. We made it a point to make it in English, so that young people can have access to it. Yeah. At some point, I think we even gave it out for free. Did we even sell? I think it was always free. Yeah. Yeah, it was always free, right? Yeah. Huh? The purple color one, right? Yeah. Purple. Yeah. Awakened CD-ROM. Yeah. Complus. I think the company was Complus. Yeah. Karen something. There was this lady who was in that company. They did the production. Yeah. I'm very grateful for that project because it got me to know that, yeah, if you want to learn Dharma, you need to start with the key thing, yeah, your intent to learn Dharma. I mean, I'm a gantang, you know. Yeah, so the teacher can be ready, all the conditions can be ready. There's only one condition that's lacking most of the time, yeah, and it's our intent to learn. I hope you all have solved that part, because I can't solve it for you. I can explain to my best. My teacher has done his part. Buddha has done his part. I'm trying to do my part. But you all got to do your part also. Venerable Kumarajiva did his part to translate this teaching so that it is accessible to us. Yeah. So you see, Hou Qing. I don't know how you all feel when you all read these sutras. Usually we just go straight to the verse. But when you look at the title, below the title is usually reference of who translated this. In this case, it's Qingbolosi Yi. Yeah. So it was translated by him. And it was in the Hou Qing period. You know, when we watch movies, yeah, and you hear about Bing Ma Yong, Qin Shi Huang, yeah, that Qin Cao. Yeah. In some of the classes I mentioned, Qing Ren Hao Jian, is this Qing. That, and Qing is almost symbolic or representative of the Han people. Yeah. Trivia, yeah, side knowledge. You know, porcelain, yeah, porcelain dishes. What, there's another name for it. What is it called? Huh? China. Yeah, it's called China. But why is it called China? You know how sometimes non-Chinese call us China. Yeah. Actually, that's the correct pronunciation. China. China ren. Qing ren. Yeah, it's basically the Qin people. Yeah, that's all these back references. So, this sutra, Jing Gang Bora Bora Mi Jing, I was going through what my teacher taught. I'm at page 35, from 29, 6 pages to cover Jing Gang. Yeah, Jing Gang. Jing Gang refers to a certain precious stone, commonly agreed to be diamond. This is the prefix for Pora. Yeah, it is describing this Pora. And there's another word here, Polomi. Yeah, some of you have attended the Heart Sutra, you will know Pora Polomi. Yeah. So, Pura is the transliteration for Prajna. or panya. And it's none other than wisdom or 智慧. So this 金刚 is describing this pura diamond. And what is it trying to describe? It's trying to describe that this wisdom has this quality like diamond that is very strong. In the sutra, it describes how the diamond among all the treasures and all the stones, precious stones in the world, is the strongest. It can cut and it can break all other precious stones. All other stones cannot cut it. So in the sutra and the commentaries, it describes similarly, the wisdom, the perfection of wisdom, the wisdom of ultimate reality, of truth, cannot be vanquished, cannot be defeated, cannot be broken by the teaching of other schools. Further, according to my teacher, it is strong in what sense? It can vanquish all defilements, but cannot be vanquished by defilements. Yeah. So this is the 金刚. But our defilements sometimes is stronger than our wisdom. Yeah. Do you all have wisdom? Say yes. Yeah. You all come for this class should have some wisdom. Yeah. Should have some wisdom to say, oh, Diamond Sutra, must better come and listen. Yeah. But this but our wisdom sometimes is not like 金刚, not like diamond, not unassailable. Sometimes strong, sometimes weak. Yeah. So here it's talking about a different kind of wisdom. I'm going to run through some of the verses. So, before that, my teacher actually went through something else. He highlighted that in the tradition I was ordained in, my teacher gave two requirements for anyone who want to go to our center to learn and practice. Yeah, he said you need to want to learn the teachings, and you must want to meditate as well. Failing any of this, then don't waste your time. Yeah. So, as a result, when we have retreats, there's always teachings. Yeah. We almost never have retreats, meditation retreats, where there's no teachings given. Yeah. There's always teachings given. And when we have teachings given, there's also some connection to meditation. Yeah. So in his years of experience, he has encountered students who only want to meditate, don't want to learn teachings. And then there are those who learn teachings, don't want to meditate. Yeah, is it true? Yeah. Of course, there are those who want to learn teachings and want to meditate. There are also those who don't want to learn teachings and don't want to meditate. Yeah. So he was highlighting that if you meditate but don't learn teachings, then how are you meditating? What method are you using? So traditionally he said, before you even meditate, you must learn how to meditate. Yeah, you must learn the 禅法. Yeah, you must learn the teachings on meditation first. Yeah. Usually in meditation classes nowadays, we incorporate everything together. So, why? Because, again, open up a class, 10-week course, then students Sifu, first lesson I can't make it. Third lesson I'm going overseas. Seventh lesson onwards, I may not be able to come. So how? Yeah. I used to have the kind of mindset, yeah, either come all the way or don't come. But nowadays I'm like, if you can come for one lesson, also come, good lah, come. Yeah. 送一点善根都好. So my teacher was highlighting that as we learn Dharma, we must also incorporate meditation in it. But if you enjoy meditation, it's very tempting to just sit there and enjoy the calmness, the quietude, and don't learn teachings. If you do that, you must be careful. A few things can happen. Yeah, you impede your development in wisdom. And as a result, your ego will go out of control. Yeah, and the ego for a meditator, I can tell you, is even higher than normal people. Although outwardly, you may not be able to tell. But inwardly, a lot of things going on. Yeah. So, with that, what is this Jingang and the connection to the Prajna? Just now I've already shared how diamond is used as a descriptor, yeah, in praise of the wisdom. So now I'll go through quite a few verses on what is this wisdom. So let's take a look. So my teacher cited this text called Da Hui Du Jing Zhong Yao. What am I writing? Can you understand what I'm writing? I'm not on drugs, you know. Ah, 太久没有写中文字了. Yeah, so this 大度大会度经中药. Do you all know this commentary? So actually, if you know the Dhamma Sutra, if you know the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra, you know the Heart Sutra, you'll know that this is actually a commentary on the Dhamma Sutra, on the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra. Because this Da, this is basically Maha. I think Chan Yu's handwriting is better than me. Even English words, yeah. Maha, this is Hui, this is Prajna, this is Paramita or Parami. And this is Sutra. Yeah. So there's another one, another commentary called Da Zi Du Lun. Yeah. So Da Zi Du Lun. So this thing, Da Zi Du Lun, then it is the commentary on the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra. This Da Hui Du Jing Zhong Yao. So this is basically summarizing certain key points about this particular sutra. Yeah. And in this case, it should be referring to the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra. So my teacher cited from this sutra a few verses to explain, to describe what wisdom is. So I'm going to just read some verses and then explain to you all. 结了义是般若波罗蜜意. So 结了义. 结了义。So, 结了义是波罗波蜜义。So, 波罗蜜, let me just give a brief meaning of what 波罗波罗蜜 is. 波罗, I've explained wisdom. 波罗蜜, 到彼岸, 度。Yeah? 此岸生死苦, 彼岸涅槃乐, 从此岸到彼岸, 解脱的意思。Yeah? 度, 哦, 名字为度。So, 波罗能度到彼岸, yeah? 也称为sorry, it becomes Chinese class. Maybe we should just do this in Mandarin, you know. Easier. You all don't know how much trouble I have to go through to conduct classes in English. Yeah, many times I'm doing live translation inside. So, wisdom. Wisdom as the foremost of the paramis leads the other paramis to perfection, yeah? Brings one to perfection, yeah? Hence known as parami. So here, 结了义是般若波罗蜜义, yeah? So 般若波罗蜜义, so that means that this is the meaning of the perfection of wisdom, yeah?We ask the question, what is perfection of wisdom? So my teacher cited this to explain. Yeah, but there's more explanation. 结了就是明白一切法都是缘起的智慧。So this is the first stanza to explain. So 结了, to understand, to know. Yeah, to know what? To know that all phenomena, yeah, is dependent on conditions. Yeah, 是缘起。诸法是缘起，一切法是缘起。Yeah, the wisdom that can know this, this is the meaning of the perfection of wisdom. This is the first verse. Any questions? No, I'm switching between English Chinese, English Chinese. So sometimes I forget to translate. You all need to, like, 师父, what are you talking about?Yeah, you all need to do your part. You don't understand, you need to help me. Because I'm enjoying myself going learning, explaining this. So, the first is 结了. The second is 无知义. So, you will find that the following verses are very interesting. So, you have 结了.And then you have 无知. So it all comes in pairs of seeming opposites. Yeah, and this is something, a feature in the wisdom school, where it seems to upturn.All the things that we know in our life. And in many ways, the Buddha did that also. Yeah? Upturn the way we look at ourselves, look at this world. So first, 结了, to know that all things are subject to conditions. Yeah? Conditioned. So 无知义, my teacher explained that this is referring to the 根本无分别智. Yeah? That when, again, Yeah, like 根本无分别智 in our monastery, we hear this every day. It is basically the fundamental wisdom that arises when you see ultimate reality. When you see things as they are. When you see things as they are, there is no labeling involved. There's no words involved.With no words involved, no concepts involved, you cannot have what we call 分别. You cannot have our usual discrimination. And so in that sense, it's 无知. That's a layer of meaning. So this 无知 is not that you don't know anything, but it's just not our usual way of knowing things. Because our usual way of knowing things is labeling. We give it a name. This a monk, this a monk cup, this a, this I don't know who put it here, yeah. Then this is towel, this is table, and so on. Yeah, it, but seriously, who put it here? Okay, yeah. You need to tell me, otherwise I cannot take it. Okay, thank you. So, 结了意无知意. So, this 无知意是般若波罗蜜意. Sorry, after saying it, I'm like, hey, how come all of you look at me like stunned? Then I realize, oh, it's in Chinese. So, the perfection of wisdom, this is the second meaning, which is that this is the wisdom that's able to penetrate into ultimate reality that's beyond words. Yeah, that has no mannerism of our usual discrimination. Yeah, that is the fundamental non-discriminating wisdom. Yeah, 根本无分别智. I give you an illustration, okay? Yeah, recently I wrote a blog on it. Yeah, this is the closest I've got so far. I don't know whether it will make sense to you. Then I shared on Facebook. Sometimes I just randomly utter something. Wow, people share. Wow, like. Wow, come out with so much description about what I said. I'm like, ah. But then when I post this, the gist of it is, when we meet up with our friends, do you all meet up with our friends? Say yes. Okay. When we meet up with our friends, what do? We catch up. What do you do when we catch up? We talk about, hey, how's things going? The ongoing, which is basically what happened in the past. Hey, not seen you for so long, where did you go? Yeah, again in the past. Hey, year end coming, are you going anywhere? In the future. How's your job? In the past. Oh, you are quitting. Where are you going after that? In the future. We're never talking about the present. Oh, yes, Sufu, we do talk about present. Hey, how is the coffee? It's in the past already. When you drank the coffee, the moment you taste, it's in the past already. And for that matter, you seldom spend the whole session talking about the present. You see what's happening? The moment we open our mouth, we are talking about the past. The present cannot be described. Describing with any more words then move us away. Huh? Mm. So, yeah, so from this, so from that verse, 无知意是般若波罗蜜意. Yeah. The next verse, 破坏意是般若意. Wow. 破坏意是般若意. That wisdom, the meaning of wisdom, is to be able to destroy. To destroy is the meaning of wisdom. Wow. So I better explain. Yeah. Later someone download the YouTube, cut this part. Oh, Sifu say wisdom is to destroy. So, destroy what? 破坏什么呢? 破坏一切可言性相义. So just now, 根本无分别智. Now we talk about this 可言一切可言性相义. Yeah. All that can be described with words. Not the thing itself, but it's destroying the concepts. So that's a huge distinction. Buddhism never talk about destroying things outside. It's destroying our false, false deluded discrimination. Wisdom, this is the meaning of wisdom. To vanquish, to destroy, to eradicate the false deluded discrimination. 非如理分别，虚妄分别。Yeah. The discrimination, the discernment that is not in line with the truth. This is our default mode. Yesterday, how many of you went for the conference yesterday? Yeah, Dr. Chu, he shared, there's one part that caught my eye, many parts, but one part, the default mode network. Yeah. There are a lot of parallel in modern psychology, neurology, and Buddhism. Yeah, because in Buddhism, we say that sentient beings, unenlightened, we also have a default mode. Yeah, but we didn't come up with the word default mode network. Yeah, we call it 习性. Yeah, 我们众生的习性就是随业流转. Yeah, 就是随着烦恼. Yeah, 随顺烦恼. That we, our default mode is go along with our defilements. Yeah, 随顺贪嗔痴，随顺这个杂染业. Yeah, this is our default mode. Yeah, now这个大慧度经中论 yeah, it highlights 破坏意是般若意 yeah, that it vanquishes all of this conceptual discrimination. Yeah. Now if we look at the later Chinese, different Chinese schools, those that talk about wisdom, you will see that this is one feature, like Zen tradition.The moment you start to have concepts, no, that's wrong. Any concepts, wrong. Yeah. So, yeah. So, what is so wrong about having concepts? Nothing wrong with having concepts, really. Without concepts, we cannot understand Dharma also.The trouble is when we take the concept to be the real thing. That's what is deluded about it. The false, the 虚妄分别, the 虚 part is that, is unreal, is insubstantial. Whatever that arise in our mind, is just in our mind, you know, really. It's, as people say, you know, it's all really just in your mind.But it's, so when we hold this to be equivalent to the thing that is outside, we hold this to be tangible, to be real, to be, you know, so important. And that is the problem. That is what perfection of wisdom, this is what this wisdom is eradicating, not the thing outside. The thing outside has its condition. 原生原灭不用去破坏的 Yeah.So, so we have this破坏. Hang on. And for our fellow Singaporeans, this is basically what it is. Then the next, you have 不不破坏意，so you can see that they are all in a pair. Yeah. So, 不破这个假名而证悟诸法实相。Yeah, 这又是一个意思。So, just now we said, vanquish all the concepts.But on the other hand, 不破坏, don't destroy. That is wisdom. 不破坏什么? Don't destroy what? don't destroy 语言文字的法。Like the Buddha, the truth that he attained to is beyond words. And it vanquishes all concepts. But he made use of concepts to teach the Dharma. Without which, we cannot learn any Dharma. Yeah? Without words, can you understand what I want to tell you? Without laksa, without the word laksa, how do I explain? So this 不破坏意 is referring to this. So in Buddhism, we say that we should not be attached to labels. Yeah? But don't throw all the labels also. It's precisely because you are not attached to labels, you are not bounded by it, that's why you can use it wisely. You can use it fruitfully for the benefit and welfare of others. On a more day-to-day level, when people say nasty things to us, then you should use the 破坏意 aspect of wisdom to not have defilements arise. But when you want to speak to others, you should use 不破坏意. Can you understand? For example, the first part, 破坏意, all words are just concepts. Concepts are insubstantial. So when people say nasty things to us, unreasonable to us, you do this contemplation. All this is insubstantial, just concepts. Then your mind is not moving up and down with that person's tongue. Yeah, as my teacher always say, 我们不要随着别人的舌头转. But if you take this and apply it the wrong way, then you think, well, in that case, I'm not happy, I just anyhow say. Then after you anyhow say, people get angry. Then you are, why are you angry? 师父 say, 破坏意哦. You have no wisdom. That's wrong. Don't you know that all the words are insubstantial? I call you idiot, but idiot, no, not substantial. It just sound idiot. Like, no. Cannot. Don't try that, okay. Yeah. So, give you some context on how very, very immediately, we don't have that wisdom yet, but to give you a sample case of how it can be used correctly and wrongly. So,
then in that case, how do you do the other one? How do you do it? It seems that in case somebody hate you, right? And then you have this thought. But then how do you, so what's the computer can you do the 不破
坏? 不破坏?
The other one. Yeah, 不破坏意. 不破坏意.
You know, I already said, I just said. When you are speaking to others, yeah, I explained what. When speaking to others, you must use 不破坏意. So you don't, when you are speaking, don't take it that, oh, these words have no contextual meaning also. The Buddha used words with its contextual meaning to deliver us to the non-verbal, non-conceptual, ultimate reality. So there's two parts to it, actually. One is the wisdom, one is the compassion. Out of compassion, we use the wisdom in a way that can benefit people. And recognizing that the words, while insubstantial, that person is taking it substantially. So you must be cautious and sensitized to the insubstantial, substantial meaning. 所谓说者无意，听者有心。Or could be the other way around. Okay? So, 不破坏意是般若意。The publication team recently announced that I think they are stopping all the printing. They are making all the transcripts. For many years, the transcripts have been available online. Yeah, so you all can go and download and read yourself also. Oh. So next, 远离意是般若意。I want to check, is it helpful for me to write it down?
Yes.
Sure. Okay, because if not, I just read and I explain easier. So you have the first pair. Then you have the second pair, 3, 4. So this 远离意. Maybe I should write in a more orderly manner. So this 远离, to be far away, to distant away. Distant away from what? 远离什么呢? 远离一切取向执着, 才能得到般若的智慧. Yeah. So to be far away, to be distant from attachment to what? 一切取向意执着. Yeah. So to be free from all the different grasping, clinging, attachment to all phenomena. That is the meaning of wisdom. So anyone can say that they have wisdom, they are arahant and so on. You go and see whether they have attachment. But don't spend your time doing that also. Spend your time looking at yourself whether you have attachment. Yeah. About this, sometimes students, in recent years, lessers, very strangely, in the earliest when I came back, a lot of students asked me this question. Sifu, how do we know whether someone is enlightened? Where can we find an arahant? You know? Do you want to find an arahant? Huh? Nobody. Looks like I've done my job. You all know that the important thing is to become an arahant, not to find an arahant. But let me tell you why I think students have this wish and need. It's because we hear a lot about how individuals in the Buddha's time, having encountered an enlightened teacher or an arahant, the Buddha himself, very quickly, within 7 days, at most a month or two or a few years, attain enlightenment. Yeah, all because that they believe that because the arahant, know exactly what to teach you. Let me see. Go and sweep the floor. Oh, okay. The enlightenment. Conversely, then we think, if this teacher not enlightened, what's the point, right? Yeah. Indeed, if you can find an enlightened teacher, is good. But the important thing is whether the teaching itself is pointing in the right direction. Enlightened teachers can guarantee that. But the reverse is not necessarily true also. Meaning, just because a teacher is not enlightened doesn't mean the teaching is wrong. And here I give you the example of a signboard. A signboard, especially those with arrow, is always not at the destination. You understand? Of course, there are signboards at the destination saying this is the toilet. It'd be ideal if you can find that, then you can go to the toilet. But it doesn't mean that all the other signboards that says toilet this way didn't serve its purpose, no? Although you cannot go to the toilet at that signboard, yeah, but that signboard is useful also. It helps you point, it points you to the right place, turn left, turn right, then you find the right toilet. And relieve yourself of suffering. So, even if you find an imperfect teacher, you know, I read a lot of Dhamma books last time, Buddhist books. And one feature, yeah, whether in the Chinese tradition or the Tibetan tradition, or even Theravadan tradition, in particular the Tibetan tradition, they always have so much, they express so much gratitude towards the teacher. They always say, to my most precious and most compassionate teacher, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Lama Osel, Lama something, something. Yeah. That day I was thinking, for me, it should be to my most hilarious, imperfect teacher, Venerable Chongguan. Yeah. But the key thing is whether the signboard is pointing in the right direction. Yeah. As long as it's pointing in the right direction, just go with the direction. Leave the signboard alone. The signboard stay there, is okay. But you must go to the toilet. You stay here to criticize the signboard. Why are you here? How come you're not at the toilet? Signboard don't have to go to the toilet. Signboard is just there to point you. Don't worry about the signboard. Yeah. So, Yuan Li. So, just this verse itself, there's so much to think about, you know. Yeah, Yuan Li Yi Qie Qu Xiang Zi Zao. At the end of the day, all the Buddhist teaching comes back to this. To cut away our clinging and attachment. But what do we cling on? We think that we cling on to the things outside. But in actual fact, we are not clinging on to the thing outside, the people outside. We are clinging on to the impression of the thing outside that we hold dear. We are clinging on to our perception of what is outside. That we insist that what is outside, this is what is outside. Such that when the things outside are different, we get upset with the thing outside for being different with the thing inside. This is the crazy thing, you know. This is the crazy thing. Nothing wrong with the thing outside. Nothing wrong with the thing outside. The thing outside arises and exists and changes according to its conditions. But it's our inability to see that through our discrimination, falsehood discrimination, we oftentimes end up with the wrong impression, the wrong image of what is outside. But because we don't see it, we think this is the real thing. The perfection of wisdom cuts away this process. And through this, then we are distant. Distant from this clinging, because we see clearly that it is actually not the true thing. Not the true thing. Yeah. But why do we want to do that? Because as long as you are clinging on, holding on to the wrong perception, to the misperception of what is outside, surely, slowly perhaps, but surely, at some point, there'll be a disparity. Disparity between reality and our perception. And from this disparity then comes disappointment, comes stress, anxiety, suffering. Some teachers, some Buddhists have adopted the other approach. Oh, since expectation is the problem, let's have no expectations. Yeah, that's a quick fix. If you can do it, you may want to use it for a while. Yeah, because at least it can give you some relief. Yeah, if you're having chronic suffering because of some matters right now, then using that is very helpful. Yeah, just cut away of expectation for now. But the Buddhist approach ultimately doesn't advocate that. Because ultimately, It is to have the right expectation. Not wrong expectation, not no expectation, but right expectation. And that's why the Buddha's teaching is always about seeing reality. Because once you see reality, your perception will be in line with reality. Your expectation will be in line with reality. It will be right expectation. Because it's important to know why we must do this. Yeah? Otherwise, what's the point of wisdom? Yeah. Wisdom must serve a purpose. And it's that through that, then we are free of suffering. So of course, we have Yuan Li, then we have Bu Yuan Li. When you want to learn Dharma, you must be like Sifu. Even though my handwriting is so jialat, I'm still writing. If one day my handwriting become very nice, I might stop writing. Just 不好看才要写, 好看就不写给你看了。 So, 不远离是般若意。 成就无分别智, 就能契合诸法如意。 这就是般若意。 Yeah, so once you have attained to the perfection of wisdom, then you are able to see the link, of that underpins all phenomena. That despite all the disparity between us, yeah, 诸法千差万别, that all phenomena, so much differences. We hold on to this difference. Okay, two levels. First of all, there is the dependent arising difference out there. Then, plus our own discrimination, creating more differences. Because we are drawn to some differences, then we impute even more value to it. We are averse to some differences, then we impute more problems with it. So, we all live in our own world. Yeah. Now, with this non-discriminating wisdom, we see the underlying principle, yeah, beneath all phenomena. We stop living at the conceptual level, where there is gain and loss, where there's all this problem. Yeah. So, 不远离是般若意. So here, this 不远离 is that the truth and our perception is not disconnected. Yeah. Currently, we are. Currently, truth and what we experience is disconnected. Yeah. So, very interesting. Pairs of seemingly opposing things. They could have, it could have been expressed in a different way. Yeah, that is all in line. But the point about this is there's another meta level of teaching, which is to challenge us that we are always in duality, you know, likes and dislikes, likes and dislikes. Yeah. So another level of all this is to break away from this, yeah, to break us away from this. So,
Bora以金刚像做比喻。 就是表示般若它不可破坏的意思.
Yeah. So this this is what we have went through earlier. Yeah. Let me see. Is there any more verses from that? Yeah. So all these different meaning illustrate what wisdom is. And we come back to the explanation earlier that wisdom can do all this. It can overcome defilements, yeah, through all this. And it cannot be vanquished by defilements. It can overcome defilements. It cannot be vanquished by wrong teachings. It can overcome wrong teachings. But early on, we also mentioned about how our wisdom, is it like that? Is our wisdom like this? Like diamond? One of the English translation for this sutra is Diamond Cutter Sutra. Long time ago, I was wondering, why is it called Diamond Cutter? Yeah. But it's actually describing wisdom, that it can cut away all defilements. Our wisdom, sometimes it can overcome defilements. Many times it can't. When it can overcome defilements, then we are liberated from suffering to no suffering. But because it's not at the stage of diamond yet, not at the jingang stage yet. Jingang, some people translate as steel, but steel is an alloy, so it's not a natural stone. So maybe diamond is okay lah. One day when we practice until we see the truth penetrated into the ultimate reality, then our wisdom becomes unvanquishable, unassailable. Then it can bring us to the other shore, from suffering to no suffering. It will not be just for a while. Not just for one day, 2 days. But in perpetuity. I give you all a few minutes to think about. Next week when we, not next week, next month when we come back, we will touch on paramita. Or parami. Any questions? Yes.
Just now you were saying that meditation can lead to increase of the ego, right?
Without wisdom. Without learning Dharma. So her question is, I mentioned about how learning of meditation can lead to ego. Learning meditation without wisdom, without learning Dharma, can lead to ego.
Huh? Wait,
repeat your question first. Don't jump.
I say that ego and reading a book, like I say, I cultivate by reading books.
Hang on. Your first part and the second part doesn't jump. Your first part is about meditation without learning Dharma. Then now you say, learning Dharma, how does that lead to ego?
No, just now you mentioned that meditations will actually lead you to
ego. Yeah, right? Yes. Then now you're asking another thing.
Yeah, but I have reading of Dharma, I also may go to ego.
So you're asking that?
Yes. So, how do you know when have you reached the stage where you go into ego? Because it's very obvious that if you don't have Dharma, ego is very normal. But when you have Dharma, and yet you have
Can you use the mic so that the rest can hear? Just use the mic lah.
Okay, the question is that ego...
Yeah, but I get a question already. Repeat your question so that they can understand. Stop scratching lah, just say. Okay, let me say for you. So she's trying to ask. Early on I mentioned about how meditation can lead to ego without Dharma. So her question is, but there are those who learn a lot of Dharma, and also give rise to ego. So how can one know? Then that's where you kind of stop and then... So basically, how can one prevent that? Yes, there are those who learn a lot of Dharma, and they also give rise to ego. So from this, you know that you cannot just learn Dharma, you cannot just just meditate, you need to do both. Because learning Dharma without the actual cultivation, that means you are just having academic understanding, intellectual understanding. without applying it in yourself. Because cultivation is about applying it onto yourself. But then if you just meditate without the Dhamma, then how do you know how to apply it to yourself? And that's why you need to do both. You see, in Chinese, so easy. I just say this, then count it really. I don't have to explain so much. English, I still have to. Okay, let me explain. Yeah, so it says that if you were to cultivate without understanding, that means without learning the Dhamma, then you are cultivating blindly. If you instead learn and don't cultivate, then you are just, you know, you are just empty talk, you know. Yeah. Desktop general, armchair general, to completely use the English Western expression, that's an armchair general. Just sit down there and talk. Can you understand? So, in the Buddhist tradition, we say, 解心要病重. See, Chinese, 解心病重高点. Yeah. It must be... You must lay equal emphasis on understanding, which is learning of Dhamma, and cultivation. Cultivation, of course, over the years, a lot of different schools and traditions has arisen in the past how many hundred years, thousand of years. But ultimately, the cultivation must always encompass 戒定慧, yeah, sila, samadhi, panya. These three cannot run away. As to how you develop them, there are a lot of different approaches. 八万四千法门, 84,000 different approaches. But let me maybe just further elaborate on how learning Dhamma can somehow lead to more ego. You see, if a person were to learn Dhamma, treating it as knowledge and knowledge alone, then it will lead to more ego. It will also shape the way the person learns. Because then the person will only want to learn new things. Things that he has not heard. Things that others has not heard. But not try to assimilate what he has learned and what he has just learned and what he has learned to sort of find the condensation of it. And apply it to themselves. Some suggested, there was this question about Eastern and Western philosophy. It would be perhaps an overgeneralization and presumption on my part to say this, but there may be some truth in it, that in general, Western and Eastern philosophy seem to vary or differ in terms of the application. Eastern philosophy almost always require that you must embody the philosophy. Yeah, Western philosophy don't really require you to do that. Yeah, you need to know it. Yeah, but I must highlight that when we talk about Western philosophy, there's the early Western and the Renaissance Western and the postmodern Western philosophy. If we look at the ancient Greeks philosopher, I would say that to a large extent, they live by their mindset, their thinking. Most of you may